Humphreys acted as if he hadn't heard her. "I'm sorry that we had to take you outside. I understand that you don't like that." "I want to go home," Cardenas repeated, stronger. "You can't keep me locked up here forever. I have a proposition to offer you. If you agree to it, you could go back to Earth and be with your grandchildren." She closed her eyes wearily. "I simply want to go back to my quarters here at Cellini. Let me go. Now." Humphreys sighed dramatically and sat on the upholstered chair near the window. "I'm afraid that's impossible at this precise moment. Surely you can understand why." "I won't say a word to anyone," Cardenas replied, walking uncertainly toward the sofa that faced his chair. "I simply want to return to my normal life." "Without warning, Randolph?" "It's too late to warn Dan by now," she said. "You know that." Humphreys spread his hands. "Really, the best option for you is to return to Earth. You'll be in very comfortable quarters, and I'll personally guarantee that your daughters and grandchildren will be brought to you." "The way I was brought here?" "You haven't been harmed, have you? You've been treated with great care. I'm still a prisoner." It seemed to George that Humphreys was working hard to control his temper. "But if you'll only do what I ask," he said tightly, "you can return to Earth and be with your family. What more could you ask for?" "I don't want to go to Earth," Cardenas burst. "I won't be a part of your scheme. You haven't even heard what my scheme, as you put it, is." "I don't care. I don't want to hear it." "But it will stop the greenhouse warming. It will save the Earth." "Nothing can save the Earth, and you know it." He hung his head for a moment as if trying to find the right words. At last he looked up at her again. "You can save the Earth, Dr. Cardenas. That's the real reason why I brought you here. I need you to run the operation. I need the absolute best person there is. That person is you. No one else could make it work. Whatever it is, I won't do it," Cardenas said flatly. "Not even to save the Earth." She gave him a withering look. "What makes you think I want to save the Earth?" "Not even to save your grandchildren?" He said it with a smile. Cardenas gasped when she realized what he meant. "You're threatening my family." He put on an innocent air. "Did I make a threat?" "You're despicable." Humphreys slowly got to his feet, like a man weary of dealing with an obstinate child. "Dr. Cardenas," he said slowly, "your options are few. Please hear me out." "I won't say a word to anyone. I'm not talking about that now." She started to reply, then thought better of it. "At least listen to what I have to say." She stared at him. "Think of your grandchildren back there on Earth," Humphreys coaxed. "Their future is in your hands." Still without saying a word, Cardenas slowly sat on the sofa facing Humphreys. "That's better," he said, smiling. "We're both reasonable people. I'm sure we can work this out." George walked softly toward them, listening intently. Star Power One.
Sitting in her command chair on the bridge, Poncho asked, "How do we know the bugs ain't chewing away at us now?" Dan had never before seen Poncho look morose. Her long, lantern-jawed face was deadly serious now. Her usual cocky grin had vanished. "They were eating copper," Dan replied. "We got rid of the wire sample. The bugs went out the hatch with it."
"You hope?"
fervently, said Dan. "Well, the ship's wiring doesn't use any copper," Poncho said, hopefully. "It's all fiber optic, I know."
"There's plenty of copper here and there, though," Poncho went on. "Maybe only trace amounts, but if we got nanobugs eating copper, they could knock out half the microprocessors on board."
"That's great," Dan groused. "The MHD channel," she blurted. "It's got a superconducting magnet wrapped around it."
"Holy Christ!
If that goes, the magnet'll dump all its energy. It'll explode? Like a frickin' bomb," Poncho said.
"Great. Just perfect. And there's not a double damn thing we can do about it, is there?"
She shook her head. "Just hope it hasn't been infected." Dan felt shaky inside. He had to swallow before he could speak.
Not much we can do if it has been.
Could be worse, Pancho said with false jollity. If we had bugs that ate carbon, they'd be chewing on us. Dan saw no humor in that.
Where's Amanda? He asked, pointing to the empty co-pilot's chair. Shouldn't she be on duty up here?
She's back with Lars.
In the sensor bay?
Yep. He's trying to jury-rig the electron microscope to get nanometer resolution.
So he can see nanobugs.
If there are any to be seen, right.
Those two seem to spend a lot of time together, Dan grumbled.
Come to think of it, that's true.
Dan said nothing. He didn't like the idea of Amanda and Fuchs playing around together, but he had no evidence that they were. Fuchs seemed like a pretty stiff, straight arrow.
But you never know, Dan said to himself.
Amanda certainly seems to enjoy being with him.
Pancho jabbed a finger toward one of the touchscreen displays.
Well, at least the magnetic shield's holding up okay.
We're safe from radiation storms.
For the time being.
For the time being, Dan echoed silently.
And the MHD channel?
She tapped at a screen.
Normal as pie.
The bugs haven't infected it then.
Maybe not.
I think I'll go back to the sensor bay, Dan muttered. See how those two are getting along.
You gonna be their chaperone? Pancho teased.
Am I that obvious?
You sure are, boss. A real worrywart.
Do you think they need a chaperone?
Probably not. Mandy can take care of herself. Lars isn't like Humphreys.
Nodding his agreement with Pancho's assessment of the situation, Dan said,
So I'll see how he's doing with the electron microscope.
Good excuse, Pancho said, laughing. Wishing he could forget his fears of the nanobugs, Dan left the bridge, poured himself a mug of coffee in the wardroom, and then headed along the passageway to the sensor bay. He could see them through the open hatch to the cramped little compartment, standing amid the humming instruments and flickering display screens, deep in earnest conversation.
My God, they look like Beauty and the Beast, Dan thought. Even in rumpled, tan coveralls with her shining blonde hair pinned up in a sensible, no-nonsense fashion, Amanda looked gorgeous. Her big blue eyes were totally focused on Fuchs. In his usual dead black pullover and slacks, his barrel-chested, thick-set body made him look like a feral animal out of some wildlife vid, a boar or a black bear. But he wasn't growling or snarling at Amanda. Far from it.
How's it going? Dan asked as he stepped through the open hatch.
They looked startled, as if they hadn't seen him approaching. Pointing to the gray tube of the miniaturized electron microscope, Dan forced a grin and asked, Find any nanobugs?
Fuchs turned away from Dan, toward the microscope.
No, it's hopeless. This machine will never resolve nanometer objects.
Dan wasn't surprised.
It wasn't designed to. I had thought perhaps I could boost its power, Fuchs went on, but that was an idle hope.
We've been reviewing the long-range sensor data, Amanda said, her cheeks slightly red.
Looking for a suitable asteroid, you know.
And?
Fuchs broke into a happy grin. It was so unusual that Dan was taken aback.
We have an embarrassment of riches, he said, tapping at one of the touchscreens. There are more than a dozen metal-rich bodies within a day's flight of us, or less.
Amanda said, We've been trying to decide which one we should aim for.
Dan smiled at her.
That's easy. Go for the biggest one.
George held his breath as he edged closer to the corner of the big bedroom where Humphreys and Dr. Cardenas sat. They both looked tense, although he seemed strung high with anticipation, while fear and anger glowered clearly on Cardenas's face. George knew that they couldn't see him, yet he felt anxious, almost frightened to be this close to them, invisible or not. Don't sneeze, he warned himself. Don't fucking breathe. All right, Cardenas said tightly. I'm listening. Leaning